Welcome to Dow Talk Interviews, a weekly podcast series that sits down with the IRL voices behind the online usernames of the leaders in the budding DAO ecosystem. Each week, we'll dive deep with an individual or individuals on what they're working on, what brought them into the DAO space, and so much more. Hosted by me, Tommy, and sometimes my friends, Frisian, Cool Horse Girl, Caden, and Ellie, each episode is brought to you and powered by Tally.xyz, the home of DAO governance. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Dow Talk Interviews. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to DAO Talk. This is our first weekly interview series. This week, we are joined by Rafael Solari of Tally, our CTO and co-founder of Tally. It's about time we finally got one of the co-founders of our namesake of the pod on the cast. Raf, how are you?
I am doing great. I'm a long time listener, but first time caller. On the pod,
first time caller, or also like the sponsor of the pod. So we wouldn't be here without Raf. So we've talked about him a lot on the weekly episodes. If you've been a long time listener, and I'm sure you see his content on Twitter, because we're always talking about Raf, Dennison, Frisian. But for those who aren't familiar with who you are, I kind of gave you a little bit of an intro. But who are you? Who are you to Tally? What's your background? What are you interested in? Take it wherever you want. What should people know about you?
Yeah. For sure. So at Tally, I am the CTO. So I spend a lot of time thinking about the tech, which includes a lot of stuff, both like how we build stuff, and what we build and where we want to go next, you know, how to design it, how to make sure it gets into people's hands and make sure we're continuing to improve all the parts of the product that help DAOs succeed. I think I have been in the space for a while, and I think DAOs or DAOs considered broadly are why I'm excited about building in this space. Before I was building in crypto, I was building Web2 startups, and the thing we would always figure out whether we were building, I worked with a few different startups building, you know, e-commerce stuff or ad targeting stuff or job recommendation tools. And each time we'd be building something, we would find out that, you know, we were building on infrastructure and platforms that maybe positioned themselves as neutral, but they weren't neutral. You know, if you could get big enough, eventually your software startup is competing with the platform that it's building on, whether you're using, you know, Facebook or Google or Amazon or LinkedIn or something else, you end up on a not level playing field, and it's tilted toward the platform. And that's what's really exciting to me about what we can build on blockchains with crypto, is we can build platforms for stuff, people to do financial stuff, social stuff, marketplace stuff. But we can set rules of those platforms. We can make those platforms have the rules written down beforehand, make them either you can't change the rules, or you can change the rules, but there's a process. And that second part is what DAOs are for. And so I'm excited to help DAOs succeed, because I think the whole internet gets better if we have ways to, you know, write software that can be upgraded, but not necessarily upgraded only by the, you know, the owners of some platform who can change the rules slowly but surely to, you know, accrue all the value to themselves and tilt everything in their favor.
Yeah, you talk a little bit about like your background, and you kind of alluded to the transition from like building Web2 startups into, you know, Web3 startups being Tally. We haven't really talked about the, you know, the origin of Tally and where it came from, and who better to hear than, you know, directly from the co-founders. Can you take like the listeners through like the early stages of Tally, maybe before, you know, it was even like, you know, an actual entity, but more of an idea, and how that idea formed? You kind of alluded to it with, you know, people being deplatformed and allowing, you know, this new age of the internet to be, you know, directly like value accruing directly to the user. What was the idea? You kind of talked about it a little bit, but like more specifically, like what was the idea behind Tally, and how we can kind of dive into like how it's grown since then?
Yeah, I think I would point to maybe the DAO idea, right? The DAO idea was around long before there were DAOs. You know, it started very theoretical. People were thinking, oh, we could, you know, reinvent the company or reinvent the nation state with entirely software. And it'll be, you know, it was a very utopian vision. Like, oh, we'll do this and then we'll make a new world and the new world will be great and perfect. And, you know, and we're revolutionaries and we change the world. But it started very theoretical. People on internet mailing lists, in early internet forums, talking about this kind of idea. And the first one big, very early famous instantiation of this idea was the DAO in early Ethereum. You know, many people are probably familiar with the story of how the DAO launched and tried to build a like investment club and crowdfund a bunch of money and blew up pretty spectacularly due to a hack. But the that spectacular blow up both put DAOs on the map, as in that they were pretty well known in the Ethereum community after that, and put a big open question about how do we make DAOs work. Because after that, there were lots of people who played around with the idea of DAOs. A lot of art, both before Ethereum, but also as Ethereum was making its way in the world in the early years. One of the themes that people always talked about were, you know, how can we make DAOs? And I think we kind of see this in not just crypto, but tech more generally, is every idea gets tried a bunch of times before it works. Like there's some quote about the .com bubble. If you look at all of the spectacular flameouts of all the ideas people tried in 1999 that didn't work, most of them eventually ended up working. And I think the same thing is true. Like people have ideas, they try them over and over again until it's their time, until it works. So that was kind of my thinking about a lot of the ideas in crypto, is you have to assume that a lot of them are too early. If they're not working, maybe it's just not their time yet. So Dennison, the CEO of Tally, and I talked a lot, we knew each other, you know, back at this time about 7 or 8 years ago. And we talked about a lot of the early ideas in crypto and why we thought they might work or why they wouldn't work or where they thought they were going. And DAOs was one of the ideas that we were spending a lot of time thinking about and trying to understand, you know, how to do them, how they would work. And our view at the time was it was hard to see them going to market, you know, back in 2016, 17, 18. But then in 2020, during DeFi summer, we saw all these projects launching DAOs to govern their protocols. And that it kind of clicked for us. We're like, oh, okay, this is a thing you can use DAOs for. This is a clear application. There's a problem to solve. It's not theoretical yet anymore. It's practical. Like somebody is trying to figure out how do we govern this compound protocol or govern Uniswap. And that's when we started Tally and started building what we saw as the gaps and build the tools that can help these DAOs succeed, because we had that problem, but you know, those people with the need for it, whether they're on the core team side trying to hand over control of their protocol to a DAO, or on the delegate or tool controller side, you know, trying to have some small share in this larger decision making body or an organization.
Yeah, you talk a lot about, not a lot, but you talked about that concept, like kind of comparing it to like pre-internet days where, you know, the ideas are there and maybe the execution or the timing of them wasn't right, but like you said, eventually they did work. And I think you've kind of alluded to that happening within crypto, particularly more specifically with DAOs. Something we talk about, and if you've listened, we've talked about it, and we're putting a lot of content around like the open governance stack, which kind of goes with that idea of like, okay, Tally is kind of the connector of the DAO space, and we work pretty, not, I want to say like official partnerships, but a lot of like what we support and integrate with is not, you know, per se something we created or Tally created, particularly with like the governor ecosystem and all the, you know, updates to the contract level and whatnot. Like, can you talk a little bit about the open governance stack and kind of how partners like Open Zeppelin and others have played a role in Tally's success, not just Tally, but also like the DAO ecosystem's success as a whole?
Yeah, definitely. So, I know you've already talked about it before, but for those who aren't familiar with it, the open governance stack, I think, it kind of includes what we would say is the very widely used pieces of software that DAOs have been building on over the past few years. And the stack's been evolving over time as people have new problems and new solutions for them. But at a high level, it's, you know, a way to do voting stuff on the token and a way to count those votes on a governor contract. So those are like two pieces of Solidity code that have been built. Each one has kind of like a long evolutionary backstory, like any good piece of software does. But today, the canonical versions are maintained or have made their way into Open Zeppelin standard library. And we think of this as a very good building block for other stuff to get built on top of. So when you think about it in really in any technology, like first we figure out that something's possible, and then we got to figure out, you know, how it should work generally. And then it kind of gets standardized, and in some sense it's done. But the reason that it's useful for it to be, you know, done is so that you can build more stuff on top of it. Like you need to first invent the car and then the, like the highway and then the shopping mall or the super center at the edge of town. These types of infrastructure they depend on some other piece first. So we think the open governance stack, these smart contracts that people use to build DAOs are one, widely used enough that they are the standard now and the right thing to build on top of. So when we look into the future, what we want to build is, you know, obviously a great UI on top of these standard smart contracts. And also we want to build ways to extend these smart contracts, because, you know, they don't solve the whole problem. But if we have to keep changing the smart contract, it makes it very hard for a good ecosystem and good tooling to emerge on top of them. So we're excited about things like modules that extend the functionality of the contracts without breaking the old interface. So we work pretty closely with a team called Scopelift that built one of these extensions called Flexible Voting. And Flexible Voting is super useful because now you can build a whole bunch of other stuff on top of the standard governance contracts, whether it's private voting, cross-chain voting, interesting DeFi applications. You know, you can lock your governance tokens in some DeFi thing and still vote with them. And there's a lot you can do with new primitives like this, but those primitives also don't break the old interface. So we can take all this, keep all the stuff we have and get new stuff. It is, I think, a really valuable advantage of this sort of composability and figuring out interfaces. And so we at Tally are really excited to both help move those interfaces forward and make sure there's a clear surface area for everyone to build on top of. Because that's another, I think, aspect of why how we think about DAOs is we think they should be open. We think they should be, like, there shouldn't be a lock-in, right? There shouldn't be some vendor lock-in to some particular DAO platform. In fact, we've seen lots of people try to start DAO tooling companies where they own the whole stack. Right? They build the contracts and build the front end and they control the roadmap for everything. And I think that actually just doesn't work very well. Like no DAO is going to adopt a contract that locks them in. At that point, they're not really particularly decentralized or autonomous. You might as well just do without the whole thing if you're beholden to someone else's platform and someone else's roadmap.
Yeah, it kind of goes against the ethos of DAOs in general, right? Of like having this lock in with a tooling platform. When, you know, the nature of the organization itself is open, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's too important of a thing to outsource. Like you want to be building on open standards so that you, as a DAO, you've got lots of, a big integration service for all kinds of tools and plugins and extensions to extend.
Yeah, it's been cool. Like, I've only seen, you know, I've only been part of Tally for like 2 years. So I've kind of seen, even in that 2 years, a ton of growth in the governor ecosystem. Like you said, like all of those modules being built on top of things and DAOs experimenting with stuff and Tally kind of like helping DAOs move in the direction they want to move, whether we can help them like ourselves or if it's with a partner like Scopelift or Open Zeppelin or a bunch of other like professional delegation hubs or whatever. It's been cool to see the growth. And I wasn't even there for the 4 or 5 years before that you mentioned. So I'm sure it's even more like poignant for you to see, kind of like look back and see the growth of it. You mentioned cross-chain governance. You gave a talk in Denver a couple months ago at ETH Denver on cross-chain governance and Tally's work with Wormhole. For maybe those who, we're going to be posting that next week, the slide kind of repurposed slides with Wormhole next week on our Twitter. So go check that out. But for those who maybe didn't see the talk or are unfamiliar with how cross-chain governance works, I know it's a very complex subject, but if you could give like a quick like TLDR on cross-chain governance and what that enables and kind of the cross-chain future, multi-chain future that a lot of people are talking about in the meta right now, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. We're really excited about what we're building with Wormhole and other teams like Scopelift. And that's a way for a DAO to be on all the chains, right? The members of the DAO, the voters in the DAO, they can vote or participate from whatever chain they're on. And everything just works. That's the high level vision, the high level goal. And I think the long-term value prop of this is that users don't have to care what chain they're on, right? They can just care about some DAO, participate in that DAO, not have to worry about the details of what's going on underneath. But I think that it'll be a while before we abstract away chains. It's still, I think, very important that users understand what chain they're on, because they have to know, for better or for worse, about what's going on that chain. You know, what are the other apps on that chain? What are the security guarantees? You know, what's a gas token? All of that today, crypto users still have to think about and care about. But it's still actually very relevant to be cross-chain because for a DAO today, because different chains have different properties. You know, so maybe they want to give users the option to trade off between cheaper chains and more secure chains, or maybe you know, the protocol is trying to go to market on different chains, and they need their DAO to be wherever their app or wherever their protocol is, and that's also something that you get from a cross-chain DAO. So we are working closely with Wormhole to roll this tech out for the upcoming Wormhole DAO. You know, the W token airdrop just happened, and the next step is activate the DAO that is going to be governed by that token and those token holders. But the stuff we've been building is more general than that. Like, we want to take the thing that we're building to power the Wormhole DAO and make it available to anyone who wants to power a cross-chain DAO. And so that's, I think, where we've been spending a lot of cycles over the past few weeks and months is thinking about how we can generalize this and how it solves problems for, you know, a pretty old DAO that started on somewhere expensive and now doesn't want the high cost of gas on Ethereum mainnet to be a barrier to participation for, you know, newer users and smaller holders. They might be interested in cross-chain governance so that some people can vote from a much cheaper L2. And similar story for applications. You know, applications today might be on a bunch of different chains. They might be on Solana and EVM chains. They might be on a few different EVM rollups. And they might still want to decentralize and have governance for their protocol and their users wherever they are.
How does that work I know it's a pretty in-depth technical maybe explanation, but like, how does that work? Like, you say, you know, someone's deployed on mainnet, but they want to, you know, enable governance for like on a much cheaper level. How would that work technically?
Yeah, you got to deploy some contracts and you got to have some bridges. But just to go briefly into the details, it's a hub and spoke model. So there's still one place where the DAO's kind of home is, like the hub of the DAO might still live on maybe on mainnet or maybe wherever the DAO started. And then the token itself can be bridged to wherever the bridges support it. So most of these chains launching these days, Wormhole will support them with a Wormhole token bridge, and the users of the token holders can have their tokens on whatever network is supported by Wormhole, and then they can vote with their tokens or delegate their tokens to someone else who can vote with them. And those votes all get bridged back to the home chain, the hub chain, and we count votes there. So the reason the system is designed this way is because it's built on top of what already works, right? We already have DAOs that work on one chain. So we took DAOs that work on one chain, and then we just added some basically spokes to our hub. And those spokes allow the token holders and voters to have their tokens and have their votes, you know, wherever they want. And then the bridge's job is just get those votes home. And that's, you know, I think that's how we like to design systems and software like this, is, you know, take something that works and figure out a way to add a feature in a, you know, in a battle tested way using stuff that also already works, and combine them together into a a new system with new capabilities, but it's built on top of stuff that's already well understood and well known and already works.
Yeah, it all ties back to like the open governance stack and you know those OG contracts that have been battle tested. You say battle tested, that's a great, you know, I think kind of word that encapsulates how DAO should be building, right? Like, okay, we have something that works, let's just continue to build on top of it instead of trying to reinvent the wheel. Like you can make the wheel so much more complex and composable based on like what you want to do, but there's no need to go back into, you know, and change it at the core level. So we'll have Raf's talk at ETH Denver linked in the show notes. So you can get, you know, like if you want to dive deeper into anything he said, like obviously we can't go like fully in depth here just talking about it. You got to go look at some, we have some great diagrams from that talk as well. And we'll be having some more content out with the wormhole next week. So you guys can check that out. Kind of wrapping up, I want to get your thoughts on the future of DAOs. What do you think is the biggest problem facing DAOs and where should the ecosystem kind of be directing its energy? I mean, maybe you've already kind of touched on it, but maybe just like encapsulating this conversation in like one like inspirational piece or like call to action over the next 2 or 3 years. Where's the biggest opportunity for DAOs to grow?
Good question. I can I pick more than one thing? When I look at the DAO landscape, I think that, you know, there's a bunch of things that are working and a bunch of things that don't work yet. And for this to work, we sort of have to solve all the things that don't work yet eventually. You know, we have some time. We don't have to solve all of them tomorrow, but a bunch of things need to work better. The things that probably come to mind most are just really getting the internal incentives right. Like we've seen DAOs struggle with either they're not all the stakeholders are aligned or not all the stakeholders are incentivized to actually care, and you know, running a DAO is work. It's hard work, but not everyone is incentivized to do the hard work. And I think that's you can't just sort people to do what you want them to do or to do better somehow. But there has to actually make sense, incentive wise or monetary wise for people to participate in a DAO. And I think somewhat related to that, the legal story has to be better. So there's some pretty interesting DAO legislation that's come out recently or is in the works. Especially like Wyoming's Dooner Law has some interesting implications for US DAOs. And there's a few other related or parallel initiatives in other jurisdictions that are worth digging into and looking at. And then on the tech front, the thing I'm most excited about in the near future is private voting. We've seen a lot of investment in DK tech, mostly for scalability, but also for privacy over the past few years. And I think it will be really interesting to try out a few different versions of that in DAOs, whether it's commit reveal voting, where it's private during the vote, but public afterward, or completely shielded voting, where you can't tell what the vote was and it's totally anonymous. I think each of those systems has pretty different incentives and also different failure modes. You know, like you want to make sure that people are some. If you have some sort of representative setup where you're trusting someone else with your vote, you need some way to hold them accountable and make sure they're not, auctioning off the vote to the highest bidder or something like that. So there's a bunch of things after we get the tech right, a bunch of social level things and best practices to figure out for how to roll out private voting in DAOs. But that's something I expect to happen in the next maybe 12 months. As this tech finally matures and is finally ready for prime time.
Love it. Yeah, I feel like a lot of the, like you said, tech, we're kind of been waiting for it to mature. I feel like a lot of it is, and we're starting to see a lot of like really cool stuff come out. Even just like talking about cross-chain voting feels like, a year ago, it feels like it was so far away. And now it's happening. So a lot of exciting stuff in the DAO ecosystem happening. As always, we'll keep you guys updated and we'll have a ton more interviews coming down the line. And as always, anything we talk about in this episode, we'll link in the show notes below. Raf, thank you for joining DAO Talk Interviews. This is a great kickoff episode, and I'm sure we'll have more content for you in the future, but thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
All right, peace.